Deep in the farthest recesses of the most distant jungle lies a city. A city populated by the most mysterious, terrifying, and downright grotesque denizens ever seen by mortal eye. Here, in the darkened corners of this cavernous locale, sits an ordinary, average brick building with an innocuous, ordinary, average blinking neon sign which reads, On Air. It is here where each week, Seth Breedlove and Mark Matzke convene to discuss the greatest mysteries the world has ever known. Now, strap on your hiking boots, grab your trusty walking stick, and don't forget the bug spray as we begin our journey through Monsteropolis.
What did you do?
There's something on the hill. Kill it.
This is Monsteropolis, a show about monsters, anomalies, and legends. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Seth Breedlove. I'm joined, as always, by my pal.
Me?
You?
Oh, yes. Mark Matzke. Hello.
And as we were last week, we are joined by Jason Udis.
Hi.
Zach Palmisano. And Adam Dugan.
Hi.
And we are going to continue talking about the production of Momo, the Missouri Monster. So last week when we, before I get into this, if you're listening to this, tonight, Friday, September 20th, we are doing a screening of Terror in the Skies and Momo, the Missouri Monster as kickoff for the Mothman Festival. We'll be showing the movies starting at, I think 7 o'clock at the State Theater in downtown Point Pleasant, West Virginia. It's the Kickstarter event. Okay. Tickets are free, so you can come down and roast to death with us in the movie theater with no air conditioning. Quick note, again, there are 10,000 people, probably more than that by now, as many as 11 or 12,000 people saying they're coming to this event tonight. If only a tiny portion of those show up, you're still going to be fighting for a seat because there are only 300 seats in this theater. So make sure you get there early to get a seat.
Where else can we watch this today?
Oh, you can also watch this today.
Maybe should
today
should quit listening to this and go watch it.
Today's the official release date of Momo the Missouri Monster. You can see it on Amazon, Vimeo On Demand, and VidiSpace. And DVD through smalltownmonsters.com. The Monsteropolis is the official podcast of Small Town Monsters. And you should see this movie. We put a lot of work into it, and we think it's really good. I dare say it might be our best movie. I'm not sure how I feel about that yet, but it's up there. It's one of my favorites anyway. So last week when we ended the show, we were talking about the second day of production. So let's go into the third day of production, which was by the single. I say this though with hesitance because there was a day during the documentary shoot that we're going to get to in a minute that was almost as bad as this. It just didn't have the same level of chaos, but in terms of work and hours put in, there was a day during the doc shoot that rivaled this for the work we had to do. So anyway, this was a Sunday and it was May, and we had to shoot the posse sequence at the Zora wetlands in Zora, Ohio. The day for me started, I was in Zora by noon and shoot. No one was actually getting to the shoot until 7:30, but I got down there very early because I knew we had to start unloading gear and kind of get things prepared for all the chaos that was about to begin. So this scene was the climactic posse sequence and the bonehouse scene. We were shooting both. And the first thing I want to talk about here is something that I, to this day, do not know what I was thinking. Just logistically, why did I choose to shoot this scene at night instead of
on a Sunday
instead
night
of instead of day for night, which would have made the most sense. Well, the reason we had to do it on Sunday night was because Bobo and Cliff wanted to come up, and that's also why we did it that weekend. Originally, it wasn't supposed to be shooting that weekend. It was supposed to shoot later. But Bobo and Cliff were already in the state of Ohio, so we were supposed to shoot it. But we could have started shooting that day at like 4. Yeah, and gotten all their stuff. Yeah. And for some reason in my head, I was like, it's got to be dark. And day for night would have made more sense.
Would have been a lot easier to shoot.
Yeah. So for people who haven't watched the movie, this is a scene that takes place at the very end of the movie where a posse of men has formed to go hunt and kill Momo. And the posse was, so we put a call out on like Facebook and through email for extras, and we needed anywhere from 20 to 30 extras. And I think we ended up with about 20, right? So what happened is we get there that day and start doing our little like pre-pro stuff. Zach and Jason showed up maybe around 4, and we started going 4 or 5, and we started going over the script and sort of planning out what we were going to do. And I think I did start shot listing things on my phone just to make sure we had everything. But I think given the nature of what we were about to do, I already knew that we were not going to be able to shot list that entire sequence and follow it in any way, because we only had Cliff and Bobo. Cliff and Bobo had been doing an event all weekend. They had to drive up to do this shoot with us. And they were going to be out in the woods from 7:30 until our goal was to have them done by 10 or 11.
We wanted to get them their shots done
first. And the way the posse sequence is structured is there's two posses. They split up. The big posse splits up and there's two posses. So we're going to shoot all of Cliff and Bobo's stuff. But before we did that, we had to do the intro scenes, which is the introduction to the posse. And that was like when you were talking in the last episode about realizing you were in the thick of it and like the chaos. I went up the hill, and when I came back down the hill, I could just see everyone laid out like at the bottom, not laid out, but like standing at the bottom of the hill, but set kind of like set up in their spots and the lights and stuff. And I was like, oh, this looks amazing. And then I was like, this is terrifying. And the rest of the night but especially that first hour, I was shaking because I was so nervous about what we were doing, because there were so many people with us. And people who had taken time out of their Sunday night to go stand in a freezing cold forest. It was like 40s. It was 40s, and most of the people had come dressed like it was August, because it's supposed to be August. And everyone's standing out there in t-shirts, and you know, we've got like, and the best thing about that night is the attitude of everyone there. Like the attitude of everyone was just joking around and like having a great time.
And then we didn't have anybody running off or acting. You know, mm-hmm. Everything that we told, I mean, they were so, they paid so much attention to what, mm-hmm. where it was very easy. I mean, I was expecting having to, you know, herd all these people and make sure everyone's in position. And it seems like everybody just kind of
fell into place and did their thing.
It wasn't difficult. I mean, it was overwhelming just because we'd never dealt with that many people.
Yeah.
But
I
wouldn't have changed that.
No, I wouldn't have changed the people. The only thing I think I would have done was to shot list the scene, have a PA stand with you and I the entire time who had that shot list. So I wasn't, because what ended up happening is I lost my script really quick. And then we were like trying to pull other people's scripts just to see what lines we were on and figure out a shot on the fly that we needed to get. And this is all as it's getting colder and darker by the minute.
It was muddy too.
And it's muddy because it had been raining.
I don't know if you mentioned that we couldn't drive our cars down there.
Oh yeah.
To manually pull everything down there.
So how many people?
Say 30 people with crew and extras had to lug all the gear about quarter mile or more, maybe half mile
back. Some muddy trails.
Yeah, down some muddy trails. And that's not light gear. We were talking like a 100-pound generator that was being carried by. Yeah, it was
It's stuff that if we didn't have that group of people willing to do that, yes, we wouldn't have shot that shot.
There's photos of the group going back there, and Cliff and Bobo were carrying gear. Oh, yeah. Like, we had every single person that was there just immediately jumped in and started picking stuff up.
They were amazing.
Were you going to say something? You were reaching for the mic earlier.
Oh, I was just going to comment for, I would say the majority of those extras and actors had maybe never been on a set.
Yeah.
And the amount of discipline they had was, we didn't even have to ask for people to do anything, really.
No.
I think that they just volunteer. I remember, did we tell them to carry stuff, or... It almost seems like we turned around.
I think I turned around and everyone, because I was freaking out as to how we were going to get all the gear there, because it was not a little amount of gear. No. We're talking lighting, generators, fog machines, all the camera gear, tons of stuff. And every single person was carrying something, and that's how much stuff there was. And
that wasn't the end of that either. Once that was there, we moved around and
The rest of the night we were... that's what I want to talk about is, so we did the posse sequence for sure is shot chronologically. So we started at the bottom of the hill with the introduction to the posse scene. We did shoot the ending of the posse scene then too, cause we were already in that spot. So remember, we shot the beginning and the end of the posse sequence. We have to, shout out Alexander Petikov and, Andy Matsky and Aaron Gascon, because I think those three did probably the most in terms of like helping lug gear. Les Odell, right? Yeah, and he's gonna be there tomorrow. By the way, he's coming in tomorrow morning for the screening. Did you guys know that? Alex is gonna be here. Yeah, he's flying in tomorrow morning. So they did the most. And Les, I gotta mention Les Odell, who was there. Tim Shannon as well.
Les, maybe saved my life that night, because I could not have made another trip, and he took maybe the heaviest piece of equipment off my hands. So thanks, Les.
Les drove 4 hours to be part of the scene too. He's from West Virginia and drove four hours and drove back. He was in a t-shirt the entire night.
I remember at one point, it was close to the end, where we were all carrying gear and we needed somebody to watch the gear, and it was pitch black, and Les is just sitting there with this gear watching it.
Yeah.
Complete darkness.
And he insisted.
Yeah.
We kept saying,
don't. Please stop.
Don't be by yourself.
In the dark, yeah.
So we shot the opening, the intro to the posse sequence. Then we shot the ending to the posse sequence. And then, but from then on, it was all chronological. So we start up this hill, and it was literally like being part of a posse or something. Mm-hmm. We had everyone walking, and I'm like following them with the camera, and like we were getting shots as we were going. I remember
we had a location.
Right. They were going to head to the opening where we were going to do this.
We just
headed on the way up to the, and they were lugging, we would shoot something and then someone would have to run back and like grab the generator and pull that up. And then
and the fog machine.
And we had fog. Yeah. And we're doing all that. And we got up to, so it seemed like time was going great though to me, because like I was like a nervous wreck, but in my head we were doing really good on time, and
so
we hadn't gotten
and 4 o'clock.
Yeah, we hadn't got to the opening yet of to the big field where we were going to shoot the climax of their part of the movie with like Bobo and Cliff and the lights and all that. And we hadn't even gotten there. We were just getting to that shot. And I asked someone what time it was. And I'm thinking 9:30, 10. And they were like, oh, it's like 10 till midnight.
We all crashed after that.
And I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. Because like we hadn't even gotten to to Adam's scenes in the movie yet. And so we had the entire back half of that, which is actually more than the front half. There's more at the back half of that than there was at the front. So in my head, it's not even midnight. And or it's just about midnight, and we haven't even finished shooting the first section of the posse scene. So at that point, I was kind of like, I think I got discouraged a little bit, because I was like, oh, I'm never going to sleep. Like, I'm not going to get to sleep ever. And so we get up to that opening, and then we had to shoot all the stuff with the smoke machine. And I think by then it was almost like Bobo and Cliff were like getting me going. Because I think earlier in the night, I was like trying to, you know, like I'm trying to be positive and everything. I think by then, everyone else, I was like starting to crash, and like Bobo and Cliff were telling jokes and stuff. And there was some funny stuff that happened up there too when we were filming that scene, like the fog machine going off in the middle of that one shot. which will be like a great outtake. But
they're really, without that group of people and without, I mean, we all hit a point during all of these shoots where things become kind of what's real. And I mean, we kind of become
this one. It was multiple times.
This was, we all kind of, when one of us was falling, the rest of us would pick,
yeah,
pick that person up and vice versa. And it was a tough time.
Yeah. That was definitely like in terms of a single shoot, that was the toughest. I'm almost leaning toward the doc being the doc. And I think you guys know what day I'm talking about on the documentary, where the interviews and Lyle stuff. I mean, that day push the boundaries of what I think we've ever dealt with. But that one shoot was like one of the craziest things. Is there anything else before I move on to the Bonehouse stuff? Cause we finished up with Cliff and Bobo, and then we hauled stuff back to the cars that we knew we weren't going to need. And then unfortunately we were down to the second posse scene, and by then it was after one. It was like 1:30 and we were heading back into the woods for the bulk of the filming. And how were you doing then? Because you were getting ready, because you were acting in all this.
Yeah, I was going to say that may be the most tired I can ever remember being, and realizing like halfway through that I'm about to be more tired than I've ever been in my entire life. I mean, it was exhausting. Like,
there
was really
something
was.
About that moment.
Yeah.
There was something about that midway moment where you realized we were behind schedule by at least an hour, if not two.
Well, there's so much going on. And you think, like, if you're just thinking back in your head, with all of that going on, surely we're 75% of the way there. And then when you realize that the first part of the posse scene is over, there's still another huge piece to go that was even bigger, I think, than what I initially thought it was going to be. Because once we got down to the Bonehouse part, which I guess we're about to get to, that was more than I expected it to be. You know, just looking on the script, it's like, oh, cool, this is going to take an hour.
Yeah, I thought we had an hour left.
Yeah, but it was not.
And then everything turned on a dime for me. Like, all of a sudden, my nose was running. I didn't have tissues. My wires were tangled. I was holding the mixer in the crook of my elbow and the boom mic. And at that point, I was like, there's not going to be any checking levels.
No.
I'm just pointing the mic and hoping for the best. There was no technical skill in any of that.
And so what we had done is at the beginning of the night, we had asked for volunteers, for four volunteers or five volunteers that were willing to stay all the way through the Bonehouse scene. And we said, you might not be done till like 5 or 6 in the morning. And Les was one of them. Tim was one of them. Aaron, Gascon, Alexander. So that was our four, right? And then there was the crew, obviously, and Adam. And
stuck with us too.
Well, yeah, the crew. Yeah. And when we took all the gear back to the car, it was 1:30. I went back into the woods and I was like on the verge of tears. I was like, I was just exhausted, but also took everything back. So we had found, real quick though, when we were scouting the area earlier in the day, we needed to shoot this part where they find a lean-to in the forest.
Oh yeah.
And it's in the movie. The lean-to's in the movie.
Yeah.
That lean-to was there.
It was so weird.
Oh, really?
They part found that lean-to. There, yeah. They just onto the existing, Andy and Adam added to the existing lean-to that they found. And it was not on the trail. That was in the middle of the woods.
We just came up. It was very strange, and it was well done. Like the base structure that was there was solid.
So they built onto that. So when we shot that scene, but there is something that happened when we got back in the woods again. I started laughing again. I think it was because of Aaron and the spider. Because there was like an orb weaver spider or something in the,
and he was just shimmying underneath.
He's like shimmying for some reason, like instead of killing this thing, he's like muttering. He's like weirdly muttering to himself and crawling underneath of this orb weaver spider into this lean-to, and that entire part of that night was really surreal because we were pretty deep in the woods, like off the trail. We weren't on a trail, so you had to be real careful of everywhere you were walking because there were spiders, and it was like, and
There's poison ivy.
And there's poison ivy everywhere. Yeah. And we're like back in the woods and shooting this scene. And it was all on the fly. Like, again, like we hadn't shot listed. So it was, we knew, I mean, there was a rough shot list, but
we knew what we needed.
We knew what we needed to get. And, we
didn't know how we were going to get.
Right. And then we did little, and then, so we get through all that lean to stuff. And we went into the scene where you give chase or whatever, where you have to run off down the trail. And that was where, that was where, again, the night took a turn because Adam had to do this spill where he's like running through this woods and he falls in the grass. Well, the grass is soaking wet. And by then it's down into the very low 40s. I mean, like 41, 42. So Adam's soaked. I'm laying on the ground getting the shots. So I'm soaked. And we still had to do all the bonehouse stuff. So we go over and we, you know, like I get down into the bonehouse sequence and for the bonehouse scene, we had already set up all the bones and everything earlier, but we had to get the fog machine down in there and let the fog go crazy and all that stuff. And Adam was supposed to do this thing where he like steps onto the side of, he's standing on the wall of the bonehouse and then did we have him jumping? I don't think I wanted him to jump. Didn't I have him come just crawling down the wall? No, I know, but did I tell you to do that or was that your thing?
I don't even remember. I just remember looking down and realizing there's a lot of fog down there and it's really hard to tell where the ground is.
So yeah, on camera, Adam jumped into the bonehouse and the ground was...
It was way closer
than I thought it was. It was way closer than he was thinking. So when he hit it, he went down real weird and hit his head. And he was soaking wet. So like when he... So it wasn't long after that, Alexander got very concerned because like...
He was a sweetheart. He was so worried.
He was, Adam was shaking, kind of like shaking because it was so cold.
Oh, man.
And I was shaking too because I was soaked.
How many people were down there at that time? It was
probably 10 of us maybe, right?
Yeah.
Or seven to 10. It was, and we're all down in this, so the bonehouse we shot all this in this old, the bonehouse sequence is back behind the village of Zor in what was during the late 1800s, a very prominent like flour mill, and all that's left now is the foundation of the building, but it's still, you know, the huge blocks and all that, and it's really cool. But it's covered in poison ivy, and at night it can be super creepy. So we were all down in there with lights and all this stuff and drenched in water and sweat and freezing, and we wrapped, so we finally finished the bonehouse sequence around 4:30. But then we had about an hour of cleanup. We had to clean up everything. We got all the bones out of there. We had to go get the ladder. And then we had to haul everything a half mile out of the woods back to the cars.
That last hike back was brutal.
Yeah.
And we had that little path we had to walk through, mud just up to my ankle.
Yeah.
I could feel the ground trying to just suck my shoes off.
Yeah, it was by that point I was exhausted, tired, and not convinced that we had gotten what we needed. The one thing I knew that I was happy with was the way the flashlights looked in the fog. I was really pleased with how that ended up looking. But that took us through. So we got back to the house. We got back to the house at like 6 a.m.
Yeah.
Adam and I and Alex and Andy. And I went to bed and Tommy had me up at 7. So I got less than an hour of sleep. And then that was Monday. And on Tuesday, we left for Missouri. So we only had Monday to really relax. And the very next morning, we left for Louisiana, Missouri to film the documentary.
Well, Adam brought these Bang energy drinks to the shoot Sunday. And I never really drank energy drinks. So I got home at 5:36. Was awake for 2 more hours. Finally got a couple hours of sleep. Went to work. Went to Cleveland to see the Lemonheads. Jeez. I think I went to work the next day and left for Missouri.
Yeah, so we left for Missouri. And I don't want to spend a ton of time on the documentary portion, but there was one... We had a disaster happen very early on in the shoot. We were still on the drive down to Louisiana, and... I'm just going to say Missouri because saying the name of the town gets super confusing. We were on our way. We were still on our way to Missouri, and we started getting phone calls and texts from Lyle that his plane had been delayed, and then it kept getting delayed, and then it was canceled. and we were supposed to be picking Lyle up on the drive down because we drove through Quincy, Illinois on the way down to Missouri, and we were supposed to pick him up and then we'd all be together and we were supposed to start filming his monologues that night because all we had was that night, the next day, and then he had to be back to the airport the day after. So he was only there for a day and a half. So we were on our way down and his plane gets canceled. So what ended up happening is his plane got canceled. He flew in the next day. He flew into Quincy, but we picked him up the next day and it was late. We had been filming all day for one thing, but it was late in the day when he got in. It was like by the time we got back to Louisiana, Missouri, it was almost nighttime and we wanted to get through his monologue. So we shot two of his monologues super late at night. And then the next day is what I think might have been like the hardest single day of filming for STM because we had to shoot, we shot at least four interviews, but we also had, we shot four interviews, but we also had all of Lyle's monologues. So there's seven total monologues. We did five monologues and four interviews the next day, plus shot B-roll.
Yeah, that's...
And
we shoot B-roll the night that we got there as well.
We shot it the night we got there and the next morning because we had stuff to do during the day before we went. We had shot two interviews that day, too. Two interviews, B-roll, and then went and got Lyle at the airport, shot two more of his monologues. But then that day, it was basically, I think we figured it was like a 14-hour day. We started at super early in the morning with Lyle's monologues, did an interview. We were like intercutting. We would do a monologue or two and then go do an interview or two. And then we go back to a monologue and back and forth. And we're driving. Yeah, we were driving all over town. And his final monologue of the day was shot. The final monologue of the day, that's the final scene of the movie. But his final monologue of the day, we shot as the sun was setting in it, behind the bridges on the other side of Louisiana down by the river. Okay, yeah. And we were dead. Like we went out afterward to like a Mexican restaurant and I was barely alive.
No, we had fun.
We were barely alive.
Well, also worth noting those first few interviews that we had to do without Lyle.
Yeah.
The style of this or the concept, Lyle was supposed to be in the room interviewing these people.
Yeah.
So
I was the stand in for Lyle.
Yeah. You had to throw some audio of Lyle asking questions later.
Yeah, there's some post-production questions from Lyle that were added in after the fact. So it was that day was just it was extremely stressful because interviews inherently are stressful for me. It's my least favorite part of this. I mean, the conversations themselves are great, and Zach will probably back me up on this. But as far as like setting up, it's not fun unless we can do it in a situation like we did in Bray, where everything's set up already. Yeah. But in this situation, we were doing interviews, then a monologue. So you couldn't set up right away. So it was like we would do an interview and then go do a monologue, then get back and the interview subject is there ready to talk. Yeah. And we had to do the setup while they're sitting there, which is what's so stressful about it. You're just like waiting for them to leave because they're sick of waiting. So anyway, we came back from Louisiana, Missouri on a Sunday, right? Sunday or Sunday afternoon or Saturday afternoon. And then it was either Saturday or Sunday. And then on Wednesday, Adam showed up back in Ohio. On Thursday, we drove to Coshocton, checked into the rental house that was going to play the Harrison House and shot all of the Harrison House scenes over the course of a weekend. And for me, that for me was the highlight of the whole shoot. Now that it's over, I don't know how I felt at the time when we were doing it, but I know that we actually had fun that weekend. I think that's the key. Like rather than just being so focused on getting the work we needed to get done, I think we were having,
we had a lot of work to do,
but yeah,
it seemed less.
I think the way I structured it too was that most of the work got done on that first, that Friday, right? Because you were there for that whole day.
Yeah.
Was that how it went?
Mm-hmm.
When did we start shooting on Friday?
Late morning, I thought.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it wasn't super early.
No, it was like in the morning. And then we did all the Harrison House stuff. So that would be all the scenes with the boys, the backyard, anything with the family, the drama scenes with the family. My favorite part of that entire shoot was the last night where, I'm trying to think. I really enjoyed shooting the prayer meeting scene, but I really liked going outside with you after dark and mm-hmm. filming that, the sequence outside, which ended up being, I think, the last thing we all shot together.
Yeah.
And I think you had left. Had you left by then?
No, I was there for that.
Okay. And we also had to get the van there that weekend too. Mm-hmm. So there was that weekend we had like a ton of coverage we had to do. We had all these little sequences, and then we were all staying at the house. So it almost felt in a way like one of our doc shoots, like mm-hmm. a documentary shoot, but we were
a lot like Invasion.
Yeah. It felt, well, the house too reminded us of Invasion. And, but that was my favorite part of the entire shoot for me, was that house.
It was cool. Cause I think being a Bigfoot enthusiast too, where that house was actually just in the middle of a ton of sightings or whatever, you just felt like you were in the middle of everything. And the house was a 1970s era house, and we were all in there together, and there wasn't a lot of stress of taking stuff to and from places. It was all right there. So you could kind of like, it just felt like a more controlled like pace throughout the whole thing. Like, yeah, there's a lot of work.
That's what I mean. That first day is the only day where I felt like stressed out, right? Because we had to get all the boys scenes, and that was a long day too. Mm-hmm. Cause we didn't drop the boys off. You didn't even go with us. You crashed that night. Mm-hmm. We had to drop the boys off almost an hour and a half away and drive all the way back. So by the
late,
we drove the boys, we left at like 11 o'clock at night and didn't get back until like 2 a.m. till we dropped them off. So that was a very long day.
Stay, but then we realized
we couldn't deal with them
tomorrow.
Yeah.
And we couldn't. No, but we would have to drive an hour.
Yeah. We would have had it done the next day. The good thing about that was we got all that stuff done that first day. And then the next day was like the prayer meeting scene we did, and the car, the van showing up, and all there were a lot of little things. Maybe the crazy board was on that first day too.
When did you do the hill scene with Ken and the Momo?
That was that Saturday. So yeah, that was the other thing we did, was like Wendorf's recreation of what he saw was shot that day.
And we just drove. Did you have
that was right down? That was the back of the hill that we were on.
Yeah,
the house was on.
Have you seen that?
Yeah, the guy that owned the property that we were renting, he had taken me around on an ATV, me and Tommy actually, like the day before, and we had seen that hill, and I was like, we should shoot something back here because it's really big and expansive. You can see it's a really cool spot.
The very 1970s scene there with kind of lumbering down the side of the hill.
Yeah.
I think it cool.
It was very silly, but I love that shot.
Yeah.
And we also shot Bill O'Reilly's scene there. Right. The other thing that we should mention that weekend you guys did was you went off to like a room and recorded the Bill O'Reilly dialogue, which Jason said you did all in like one take.
Yeah, we did two just to be safe, but mm-hmm. he nailed it the first time.
Yeah. Doesn't surprise me. You also had my favorite moment. One of my favorite acting moments in the entire movie, which is the crazed pastor sequence.
There were, Mark's pastor sequence. And then there was a bit of acting between Adam and Sarah where she steps off the front porch.
Yeah.
And she stares a hole through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you look shattered.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt shattered.
It was very authentic.
Yeah. We all stood around and were like, whoa. Very icy feeling. Yeah.
It was good.
Which, by the way, a lot of credit needs to go to the acting, because I think at most there would be like three takes of any given line.
Yeah.
So it was.
That's. I mean, one thing we probably should have said during that posse sequence was like, Cliff and Bobo had every line. Like they had their lines down pat, and Adam did too. But like, they had just showed up and like started unloading lines, which was awesome. So like, mm-hmm. again, like the shoots are so weird. Like for Adam was doing multiple, Adam was helping carry gear and stuff. So when you had to go from that into like your character, I don't know what that's like, cause I'm on the other end of the camera. So it's all production for me rather than acting.
Well, it's probably the same way we feel about doing an interview, having to do the monologues.
Yeah.
Going right back to
Yeah, I would assume it's the same. Yeah, just the same thing.
Like, how did you approach the acting, like, that weekend? Was it different? Like, how did you handle? Because the first weekend was almost like finding the character, because you did the, like, the Sutter scene and, like, the posse sequence.
Right.
But all the like family drama and stuff happened at the house.
Yeah, it was weird because it was back.
Oh, and the first, your first scene was super dramatic. And right. It's a cut scene. Yeah. It's not even in the final movie, but the first scene you did with the boys was where they're supposed to be returning from that fishing trip that we didn't get the fishing scene. We didn't get the shoot where they come back and they meet you. You guys all hug, but then they're like screaming and you're screaming into the woods and like,
yeah. Right. Yeah. It was very much like it was almost, cause it was interesting. Cause you already have in your head what happened, like at the wetlands and in the bone house, like you already have that there. And then you have to kind of disassociate with that. And now you're this character that's not happened yet. That's not there. You're just learning about this. You're just, so that was really interesting. And it was, I think, being on something like this where, I mean, you don't have a ton of time. Like, you just have to, like, you have to start. And it definitely took a while for me to, like, get my footing with everything, too, because you're just there. And all of a sudden, like you said, the first scenes are dramatic, emotional things. And just having to just dive into that really quick, like, when the Edgar in your head is a character that was running through the woods chasing down a monster, and now all of a sudden he's a dad and there's a wife and there's his kids and they're eating dinner, and then they're, you know, it was definitely different. Like, it was just diving in both feet and then being like, all right, cool. I hope that came out halfway decent at least. It'll get better, but let's just try to make do here in the beginning anyway.
It was the dinner table scene, probably the most, the lengthiest dramatic scene we shot. Cause it seems like it took a couple hours to get done, right?
Yeah. I think so.
We had so many different angles to cover, too. So we had to run through that.
The one angle isn't in the movie. There was an angle that was over the boys' shoulders. It's not, or no, maybe it's pointed at the boys because Will wouldn't stop staring at the camera. His eyeliner, I mean, the entire movie, he's just staring into the camera.
He ate all of his...
Yeah, well, that's part of it. You had to prepare the delicious food in the first place.
No, you're not supposed to eat all the food. So he sat there and just poked the fork.
Oh, yeah. So then we just had his fork scraping on the plate. Yeah.
And it was like ramen. It was just like straight ramen noodles. And the boys were like, this is real good.
Sarah, and Amy ate it after we finished the scene. We made six. Okay. I thought it was six things of ramen noodles.
The most ghetto rigged, like, ramen noodle bowl. I just put cold water and shoved it in a microwave. Yeah, ramen. And I just dumped the chicken flavor in it.
I think I remember you before that scene being really excited about how good you could make that ramen. And then you just threw it at the
Because didn't we ask who can make ramen?
Yeah, and you were like, here, let me do it.
I got this, and I had my hands in it.
That was the thing. We were taking it in there and then to watch the kids sat there and eat it?
Yeah. Are you serious?
I didn't think it was the food. I thought it was just the front.
But that, like that...
We're all sweating. You're digging in it with your...
That covered the entire production up until what did we have to do? There was some pickup stuff we had to do after the fact, or was it just that car stuff I did? So I did the car stuff to close out
the diner.
So we filmed at a diner in Bolivar, Ohio, which is where I grew up, and we shot there's a diner down there that it's actually been redecorated since, so it's a good thing we got in there when we did, because it's not modern, but they added a lot of stuff we would have had a problem shooting around. So we did the diner scene as the final shoot on that Sunday. We drove back up from Southern Ohio, and I remember leaving the diner and feeling like a weight was off my shoulders. Like, just, I felt good about where we were. And then I got... Post-production on this movie was really abrupt. Like, I think I was cataloging footage the next day, or like the day after you left, which would have been a day or two later. And going through the footage was where I started thinking, I don't know anything about making a narrative film. Like, as far as editing goes, I don't know how to put all this together. Mm. So the edit to me was always very, the doc stuff was simple, but the narrative, up until the very end was like, I just don't know that this is working. What changed everything for me was seeing the movie with the music. That was the first time where I started getting the impression that everything was working. And then Ciantino just adding in some of like his effect stuff.
Yeah, Brandon's like a necromancer or something. Because when I watched it with the music for the first time, I was like, wow, some of this is scary and unnerving.
Yeah, I think the part that jumps out is the where he checks the backyard.
Yeah.
Because that scene, there's a few things that happen in that scene. The sound design by John Parfit, that it's a really weird scene to watch without sound. And I knew what was going on in my head, and I think you got what I was doing. But I think with the sound design, it sells the animals running off. Yeah. Like, that's the first thing that comes up to me, is like you're hearing the footsteps and then the wind chimes. He's got the wind chimes very subtly in the background, and Brandon's doing these like kind of hokey musical cues when the animals take off that I love. Like, so that to me feels like straight 1970s. Like, that's ripped from a 1970s drive-in movie. So there was a point where the sound design and the music and stuff all came together, and all of a sudden we had a good movie. Yeah. Like, I didn't, and it was funny because we had this pretty much the same movie that you see now, but it didn't have the music, didn't have sound design, didn't have the finished effects. But watching it with all those things, I was like, oh, this is a really good movie. Like, somehow we pulled off this insane thing that we came up with months ago.
Yeah, I think we were all, did I cut somebody off?
No, I was just looking around for someone else to talk.
I think we were all kind of holding our breath all summer, not because we didn't think it wouldn't come together, but it was so ambitious.
There was never a guarantee this would come together, because it is from a storytelling standpoint, I don't think it's something that's been done before, which on its own says something.
I think we finished filming and we were like, we did it, but we were also kind of like, should we have done that?
Yeah. What are your thoughts on the entire thing, like, I guess production and just like as a finished product?
I think I probably said this on the last, well, the show is you and I talking, but from a writing standpoint, I was really amazed at how the movie I saw in my head as I was writing the script and what ended up on the screen was such a match that it was uncanny to me, because, you know, I just assumed that you take a pass at the script and then it would go through all these permutations and things would happen and it wouldn't be nearly what I thought it would be. And it actually was exactly almost and better than I expected. And really the moment for me where I knew this is really going to work is when you sent the rough cut with the music underneath it. All of a sudden it went from, this is really, you know, this has potential, but it's, you know, what's missing. And it was the music. And once it was there, it was a movie. Yeah. I mean, it was cinema at that point, and just really exciting.
Just go, if we could make one suggestion to listeners, just go buy the soundtrack. Yeah. Don't even bother with. Should we sell the soundtrack? I'm not, no. Brandon has all his soundtracks available online. Where are you at? Like, production, like looking back on the production as a whole and finished product.
I think, like I mentioned in the last episode, like seeing what was originally written and then what came out was really cool to see how it was obvious, like there was a very clear vision from the beginning and that's what came out. I think the most impressive thing is that all of that, what you guys did with the doc, what we did with the narrative portion, the way that it works together, and we've talked about this too, like it's different in a sense that it's a very you can't look away from the movie while you're watching it, like you need to pay attention. Yeah. And I think that's good. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's totally different than anything else that's been done, where you've got a movie within a movie And then the way that you edited everything together, like I really like it. Like it was definitely a learning experience for me, having been the first thing that I've seen start to finish all the way through. But I mean, I'm super proud of it. Like I say that if somebody take me out of being in it whatsoever, replace Edgar's character with somebody else, I don't care. I really like it. Like I genuinely like it. I like the music. I like the actual cinematography of the whole thing. I like the acting. I really do enjoy the movie, which I think is cool, because I don't think you know going into it. Like, are you gonna watch it and be like, oh, I don't even like that. Like, being honest with myself, I don't like it. But I really did, and I really do. I really enjoy it.
On a scale of 1 to 5, what would you rate it?
Probably a 2.4. I'm just
kidding. Son of a... You just said you loved it.
No, I'm just kidding. No, I really did. I really.
Yeah, and it's no secret. This is, I mean, at least partially a love letter to the genre of the Sasquatch 70s drive-in movie, and having the opportunity to play a role in that meant a lot to me personally, because I grew up on those films, and it's probably my favorite type of movie.
It's interesting because to me, this probably more than any other movie we've made is for people who love movies. Rather than specifically for people who love the paranormal or cryptids, I think it's more of a movie for people who love movies. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be reflected in how and who is responding to the movie in the way we want or would want them to. Like Steve Bissett responding to it the way he did is exactly what you would want from someone like Steve Bissett. But it's like, I've been very open with you guys privately about my thoughts on the movie, as far as like, to me, it is, and this isn't this isn't me talking about me, but I think it's an intelligent movie. And I just don't think you would have, maybe you wouldn't have expected that given what it just seems like a fun, mm-hmm. a fun loving movie, but there is a lot going on. And when Adam says like, you've really got to pay attention, it's not just to the stuff that's on the surface. It's like, There is a lot going on here beyond just a fun, like, narrative movie that isn't telling the whole truth that gets set straight by a documentary. That there's something there about, like, storytelling and how stories change depending on media and who's involved in the creation of it. And there's a lot to unpack. And it's funny because, like, some of the negative reviews I've read are they're more confused than negative. It's just a confusion. And to me, that's a reflection of the fact that either the writer didn't pay enough attention or missed some of the messages of the movie to begin with. But even the documentary portion of this movie is the quintessential Small Town Monsters document. It's almost more Small Town Monsters doc than anything we've done before, because it's solely about that town. Like, this is how it affected that town, how it continues to affect the town today, and where it's going to go in the future. And there are some really nice emotional moments in the documentary that I don't think we've ever captured before. And especially like Chief Ward's daughter, Snooki, and, mm-hmm. and just little like moments like that are really great. But as a movie, I think I'm very proud of it right now. And the way this works is like, we're just putting this out. So I'm going to be like, this right now, and then give me like a week and I'll find stuff I hate about it. But like, I think it is exactly what we set out to do and more. And I think as an audience, I hope audiences give it, if they don't get it on the first pass, watch it again. I just think there's so much there. What I keep, the thing I've heard from that would be a possible negative is a lack of understanding as to why the narrative film isn't an exact interpretation of what actually happened. And all of that is explained throughout the movie. And there's also very clear explanations as to what is real and what isn't. So some of that stuff you have to watch again. And I love the fact that we've made a movie that will reward multiple viewings, and one that I don't think spoon feeds a message to the audience. There's stuff going on under the surface of this movie that is apparent. And I don't think it's just apparent to me because I came up with it or was part of the team that came up with it. I think it's there. You just have to watch it and find it. I'm really proud of the movie and the experience too. Like before you and Zach talked, this is I think my all-time favorite STM production, just as far as looking back on it, it was 10 days of complete chaos. Like, but there were so many moments in that 10 days that I had an absolute blast with, like, you guys and, like, the actors and who we were working with. And no matter how miserable things got, there was always something kind of funny going on, or, you know.
I think in a really subtle way, this movie is kind of a Small Town Monsters retrospective. There are a lot of nods to where we've been, and I think hopefully it's a look at where we might go from here. And
not necessarily as, see, people, this is what I keep seeing online. It's like people are like, I can't wait for you to do more of these. I think a lesson from this movie should be that we don't do the same thing twice, and I don't really want to do the same thing twice. Like, we're always going to be trying to do something new. But I know what you mean.
I think just as a creative person, I got the exact feelings that I wanted out of this process. I hope people like it. I think people are liking it. And usually when we finish one of these films, that's like my main concern is, how is it going to be received? We finished this one and I like it. And that's, you know, I don't know if I could give it any higher praise than it's so easy to get self-conscious about things and hope things get interpreted right. But this whole thing landed exactly how I hoped for me on a personal level. And I think I speak for a lot of us with that.
Zach,
I hate this movie. No, it's an amazing, it's been an amazing experience, and I mean, it's been very, very difficult, but pulled off something amazing, and we didn't, I think that all of our concerns will be squashed once these reviews start coming in, people start picking up the DVD. You guys said everything. I'm not gonna, what else to expand on?
Yeah, I guess we're done. I don't know what else to say. I think we've probably talked over 2 hours now about Momo. So I think we're done. So for our listening audience, we will return to the paranormal next week. If you want to see Momo and experience what we created, you can see it on Amazon, Vimeo On Demand, VidiSpace, and DVD. We are working on potentially getting it out to a larger number of platforms. So that might happen in the next few months as well. We will be at the Mothman. We are at the Mothman Festival today. So if you're listening to this on the 20th, come see us. If you're listening to it on the 20th, 21st or 22nd, you can also come see us, but you won't be able to see Momo. You can buy it though. Buy it off of us. We have email and stuff we're going to get to next episode as well. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating and review on iTunes and send us mail, monsteropolismail@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook, still not Instagram. And thanks to everyone that listened. Thanks to everyone that was a part of the movie. I will say, I don't know if I said this in the last episode, Momo was the first STM movie where at the end of it, this is going to sound slightly wrong, but it is the first STM movie that is beginning to end a collaboration where you had people involved in the pre-production, which doesn't happen. Pre-production on STM is like me talking to witnesses, and then we just go film, you know, we usually have a little talk or whatever, but this was like, you remove any one piece of the puzzle and the whole thing falls apart. And that's not to say that the other movies aren't collaborations, but as far as like in the process, where every single piece of the process is multiple people doing work, you know, like doing creative work, this is the first one.
I don't know if we mentioned Luke, just to give
him, yeah he helped, yeah, Luke was with us during the documentary. Luke all was on the documentary shoot and did some awesome work, especially like with the handheld A7S work. That's all him. Rain was a frequent problem on this movie. It was it didn't matter what state we were or where we were getting rained on. But yeah, shout out to Luke as well. So, and Santino and Adrian and Tommy.
Adrian and Tommy have a cameo.
Yeah, Adrian and Tommy are in the diner sequence. So, all right, that's it. We'll talk to you guys later.
Thanks.
Bye.
I didn't know how to end that.
Monsteropolis is proudly presented on Wadsworth Community Radio 97.1 FM or streaming live at wadsworthcommunityradio.com and is proudly underwritten by Thurber's Jewelers on the Square in downtown Wadsworth.